an Amsterdam neighborhood behind the Amstel station. Watergraafsmeer, a grid of streets behind a polder. Two-story brick houses. This is the world where Henk Hofstede grew up. He writes about his mother, his grandfather Jacob, his friend Peter, Rudy the hairdresser, about boats on the canal, about the rain. Crane driver, two skaters, in the Dutch mountains, JOS days, House of Jacob, Les Jumeaux, the concrete house, walking with Maria. Fahrenheitstraat, Reaumurstraat, Celsiusstraat, Torricellistraat, a microcosm. Life in the Valley of Bricks.
Leven in een vallei van bakstenen. Een jongen uit de meer.
Dial Nits, a podcast about the Dutch band Nits. A celebration of five decades of sophisticated music from the Netherlands. Your host, Erik Fekkel.
I inherited the house where my mother died. I'm an only child, no brothers, no sisters, no animals. My father has built his house for the family in 1968, a concrete house with one floor.
This is 1968, you said?
Yeah, 68. Yeah, everything in this house. Now it hurts. Yeah. We're standing in the kitchen, and the kitchen is more or less the same. It's a little bit, let's say, it's a little bit more empty. When my mother was living, there were a little bit more tables and things. Yeah, but still, it's more or less the same.
Shall we go and have a look at your
room? Yes, yes, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This was my old room.
It's different now.
Except for the floor.
Oh, the floor is still the same. The
floor is still the same, yeah.
Yeah. When I lived here, in one weekend when my parents were gone, I rebuilt this whole room into a hippie place with green and orange walls. I had the piano here, and then you moved here a table where my record player, my record standing here, my bed was there, and there was a low ceiling where all my drawings were on, so it was like a hippie cabin. And my friend Peter was living there on the corner. We will pass the house later because his father was the baker. The whole bakery was there, and I could see his window. So because
is that the Peter from Crane Driver?
Yeah, Peter's building houses. And he's an architect. Yeah, yeah.
If I look at your oeuvre, like those all those songs,
yeah.
This seems to be have been a really, really important place because it keeps on coming up.
Yeah, it keeps on coming up. The house and the memory of the house, and it's such a simple house. It's just a little concrete 60s house. But of course the history of the neighborhood is important. I mean, my whole family was living in this neighborhood. My grandparents from my father's side were next door in the house of Jacob, because he was called Jacob. But the other grandparents were living here. They're in the Torricelli Street, and we will see that street. And of course we will pass in the Fahrenheitstraat, where I also lived. We will pass the barber shop, and still there, because Rudy, well, he went in the footsteps of his father, the barber, and he still got his barber shop. And I hope he's there, because it's a museum. It's wonderful. It's really, Rudy is the last one living in this neighborhood of my generation.
Reminds me a bit of McCartney's house.
Yeah,
you've been.
I've been inside, so that's why I really found out that there was a big resemblance in also in atmosphere, of course. That was a 50s house, as you know, a little bit bigger, a little bit, but the whole atmosphere is almost the same. Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so
Well, I go down. But you're right, it resembles the McCartney atmosphere in that house in Liverpool. Yeah.
One neighborhood. And as I told you, the rest of the family was living here. All my uncles and aunts. So the moment we had birthdays, the whole family was there. And because they were in this operetta choir, they were singing the songs during the evening, the whole evening. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I've only one recording, but it's not here. It's in a cafe restaurant where they were singing and celebrating a wedding day of my parents. Yeah, and that's the moment that I started singing too, because I had this guitar, this Egmont, also the same guitar that George and Paul and John had, the Dutch guitar, cheap. And so when I started singing, I could sometimes sing a song during those evenings. It was fun. Yeah, I liked it.
Tommy uit Tennessee.
Once on a cold gray morning, we set out for a walk of the Watergraafsmeer. We started the house that Henk's father has built, and in which, at the time of our visit, one of his daughters was living. Step out into Reomeerstraat and turn left.
The dike there, in the old times, there were lots of boats passing. I mean, all through the day. So when you listen to the Dutch mountains, that's the line of. I was born in the Valley of Bricks, where the river is high above, that's it. It's not a river; it's a canal. But anyway, so you're really deep in the world here.
Yeah, you're in a polder, like.
Yeah, really, really a polder.
Under gray suburban skies, rows of two-story houses, brick or concrete, little gardens in the back, small front yards, open curtains. A cat sits in one of the parlor windows and watches this peaceful world when nothing much happens. Some road work is being done. A mailman rides by on his motorbike. Above our heads, people on bicycles ride towards city center, past the neighborhood.
Almost on every corner there was a shop.
So you didn't have to go downtown at all?
No, no, not at all. No. You could do all your shopping here. And of course that changed already in the 60s when the supermarkets came. People got more and more cars, and then slowly all the shops disappeared. This was not like now, like with the villas, it's absurd. It was all industrial buildings, little factories, and so it was very, very lively. And this was the bakery. This was where Peter, my friend, was living. I've got a painting, point of view there. You can see the bakery, and I'm standing there next to the car, and I'm waving.
You still in contact with Peter?
Yes. Sometimes we visit here, the neighborhood, to look at the changes. We do it regularly. And he is also, he's now a pensionado, but he started to paint again. But in the 70s, he made a lot of photographs here, and we already painted a lot of houses here. We always were trying to capture the neighborhood, and we still do. But he's sending me paintings, and I do the same. So once in a while we are here.
Crane driver, lift me up, put me in my past. Now Peter's building houses, I'm a keeper of records, both of 51. The artist, the keeper of records, and his friend, the architect, measured the passing of time.
The shop, and they were living upstairs.
Shared memories.
A family with three kids. and his sister moved to Canada, and that's where the song Two Skaters, because Two Skaters is also about Peter, about we were always skating here on the ice.
And also Peter's sister, she sent the news, music from overseas, like the Velvet Underground.
And yeah, her sister went in the 60s and was sending the Beatle albums, the American Beatle albums, and the Velvet Underground. Yeah, that's, and his room was there, and we were, well, playing it upstairs.
Sister in Canada, she's sending a gun and one pair of skates. Gun is not real, the shoes are too large. You're loaded away.
In this neighborhood, every house seems connected to the history of the Hofstede family, to Hank's youth, and to the story of the band. Two of the videos were shot here, JOS Days and In the Dutch Mountains.
In the Dutch Mountains video, I'm biking through those streets. And we had this truck, our truck, and I think Tom was on top of the truck with the camera on a tripod and driving very slowly. I think Rob was driving, and I was on my bike, and we went through all the streets.
It's really what amazes me is how homemade the whole thing is.
It's completely homemade. It's like. It cannot be more homemade than this. we had these ingredients. Of course, we bought this camera and some equipment. That's it. And we just start. And I thought, yeah, Dutch Mountains. What I'm talking about is this neighborhood. I'm talking about the Valley of Bricks. Oh well, this is it. So let's film.
Part of the scenery of youth in Watergraafsmeer, the chocolate factory Bloker, which was destroyed in the 70s.
You will find in the Angst album were made to my grandfather. A couple of photographs where he photographed this corner, and you can see the tower of the Bloker factory. That was the only skyline we had. There were no other high buildings, just a little tower.
How was it to have a chocolate factory as a neighbor?
It's very nice because I like the smell. And on some days when the wind turned towards here, you could smell the factory. It was very, 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 very deep chocolate smell. So everybody, okay, some people hated it. But I kind of liked it. And my father, because he's at his building company, sometimes worked in the chocolate factory. They had something to do, to build, and then I was going with him inside the building, where the smell was even. I mean, it was always it's too much. I was really you walked into a chocolate bar, and it always triggered something. When I have to smell somewhere else in some cities, I think also in Switzerland it could be. I always have, oh my God, yeah, the Bloker, that's my childhood.
Sometimes the past holds difficult memories of human struggles, of the Second World War.
My grandparents used to live.
Torricelli Street, 29 and 31.
And in the Lisiumo, I'm talking about this house. One of the lines is 29 and 31. And here was the house of the family with the young boys, the black uniforms, the Nazis. There were maybe 18 or so. What I know that they left for the Eastern Front. Well, we will visit Rudy now. He's ready. You can see his shop.
There's a shop around the corner where a man's cutting hair. He's talking to mirrors. He will always be there.
Hi, Rudy.
Hoi. Dennis Eric, ja, hij maakt een podcast over
dit. Rudy's father owned the Cup Salon on the other side of Fahrenheitstraat. Now it is Rudy who has taken over the business. Once inside, you cannot help but be reminded of the barbershop on Penny Lane in Liverpool that Paul McCartney sketches so beautifully in his song. Imagine a combination barbershop, meeting place, and local museum of the neighborhood, where, once more, the passing of time is measured in photographs and illustrations.
You see all the other things, the cars from that time.
Oval Kapteinenstad.
Yeah.
Simca, Fiatje 500.
Yeah, it's a pity that probably we just moved out, because otherwise the Fort Anglia my father had was standing there.
And you have the photograph with Peter. We talked about Peter, the architect.
Another reminder of the past in a back room. Some memorabilia of the local band that made it on the Dutch and international scene. Posters from 1978, from 1988. Also some ticket stubs from a moment when Henk used to DJ in a local club, playing new films and records.
Yeah, super.
Okay.
Is goed.
Tuurlijk. Hey. Okay. Doen we het goed aan van net.
Ja.
Okay. Hoi.
See you.
Bye.
And then we step out into the street and into another memory.
One of my fondest memories. There was a family living with a couple of young boys, and what I remember is after dinner time they were walking in their neighborhood and singing Italian songs. And they were beautiful, they had beautiful voices. They sang in three voices, and they walked around and they were singing. And it's incredible, beautiful. We all remembered it.
And they were Italians, what?
No, but Italian music was quite popular. Things like this.
Further up on Fahrenheitstraat, there used to be a building of importance for the neighborhood.
It was the place where there was the guitar lessons, the fanfare rehearsed here, the ballet club, and my first performance was here in this building. And a famous Dutch band, The Lords, Rob de Nijs, they rehearsed here. It was the first time I saw a band rehearsing with amplifiers, with electric guitars, and Rob de Nijs. The whole band lived in this neighborhood. Several bands lived in this neighborhood. The Lords in the Muskers, set in the Muskers. They also rehearsed in the Fahrenheitstraat. I could hear them rehearsing. So there was all, and I remember those boys, because they were different. They had suits, and they gave me a mother of pearl plectrum. And on that corner, the last house, there was a famous female singer, Ria Valk. She was doing a kind of cowboy act, and she was in the 60s very popular, very popular. And when she left the house for a concert or so with her father, they had a Mini Cooper, and she always had this cowboy hat. Or with cowboy clothes, and she went into the car, and then we all were behind the window. We had, oh, there she is. That was our first encounter with stardom.
Take a walk with me, show you my reality, and all the things I like to see. Stay with me. Fantasies and factories and boats and buildings on the riverside. Smoke on the river tonight. Thank you.
we walk back to Reomjestraat, back to the house of the family. Right next to it, one door down, stands another landmark in Nitzlor, the house of Jacob, where Henk and his friends started making music.
Yes, because it was an old-fashioned house of my grandparents. The front room was the, let's say, the Sunday room, the beautiful room, where they normally were not sitting. And we were rehearsing there with Giel played there, and we had another drummer and a tape recorder. We recorded things here. And there's some other recordings made by Rudy, the hairdresser. He had also a tape recorder, a hooer. Because when you had a tape recorder, you had the power. And you could do a lot of things. And he also recorded some stuff. He still got it. But it's like us playing Gloria and things like basic songs, Kings maybe, and old songs.
One of the demos recorded at home in the mid-70s became a classic Nit song 10 years later, The Bauhaus Chair.
Suddenly you came to see me after all these years. You had found someone who could kill your fears, and there's laughter after all those tears. And you took a seat in the Bauhaus chair that I bought for you. How are you? I said, and you said you're fine, and I wish that you could still be mine, and you would sit and stay.
First thing that strikes one about the lyrics is that they are not written in your own language, but that you choose what I call the Esperanto of pop music and rock music, English.
You're right, you're calling it that way. It's the language of pop music, I'm sure.
And why did you choose that path?
So I grew up with probably only English music, because the Dutch music, I mean, now talking about the language, was not my type of music. It was to be compared with the Schlager in Germany. It was not pop music at all in Dutch, in the Dutch language.
Mm.
Or they were horrible translations of English or American songs. Popular music, commercial music, and the things I liked, they came from England and America. But of course, in my childhood, the music at home was sometimes German. Conny Froboos, Rex Kildo, those were the names. And at home we played and we sang a lot of operetta, German music, lyric-wise. So there was not even a discussion or a thought to write in Dutch.
You're writing in a different language, and that's not an easy task sometimes.
No, but it's also a kind of escape from your own world. You are already in a different world when you use another language. And you try to be in that world that you love so much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the world of Lennon McCartney, the world of Bob Dylan, the world of Joni Mitchell. So the nearest you can get is to use that language. But it, of course, it's difficult.
But at the same time, it also permits you to have an audience somewhere else, because if you sing in Dutch, I don't know.
Especially we are already traveling in Europe from 1981, starting with Germany and France and Switzerland later, and Greece, and we come to Finland. I mean, you have to use this Esperanto, this language of music, or let's say pop music.
It's also interesting because you basically walk in with a Dutch education, And sometimes you can feel in the lyrics that maybe English or American people wouldn't write that way, but that this is also part of the poetry of the whole thing.
I think that's the charming part of it.
Mm.
We keep on writing from our culture, using their language. In my case, it's not American or English music, or I will take care of the cat because this is horrible.
She goes on forever. She will not stop. That's why I do it. She's very old. Going through a difficult period.
Yeah, we're talking about the special poetic stance that you take if you come from a different background and write in English. And you're aware of that distance, that sometimes maybe your English is Dutch English.
Yes, it is. I'm sure. I try, of course, and I check. Of course, I had to learn words. I had to look for words and sometimes I make it easy by using the same words. It's a little bit more naked, this language. It's not that rich as, of course, a native speaker would write. It's a little bit like a hotel guide or how to use your bathroom or to to use your shower and bed or. But of course, that fits the music. It fits the bareness of it, and the more primitive decisions in language, they kind of fit the sometimes the complicated music. Otherwise, it would be a little bit too much if I'm writing literature all the time, and it's not. It's not even poetry. It's close to it sometimes, but it's still part of the song. It's still part of the melody. Of course, it also has to do with how I start the lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Most of it, they come from the sessions that we do, our first sessions of songs in the studio, in the rehearsal room. I'm always singing along. And in a language that sounds like English, but it's not. Part of it is English. Part of it you can recognize. And that's exactly what I'm doing. And sometimes I use those moments, those words I find while working on a song. They are improvised, but they're hidden in my head and they come out without thinking. At the moment I start thinking about it, it stops. I cannot make a melody anymore. I have to stop. I'm not thinking about what I'm singing. I just let my mind open.
Well, like the music in that sense. I mean,
yes, like the music. But sometimes for some people it's very difficult to even open their mouth. They hide what they could probably sing at that time.
Mm.
This collection of words that are hidden in your head.
Using the English language in that way is really interesting. It's really poetic because sometimes you might come up with images that maybe your cat is.
Yeah, I knew that this was the. Now I open the door. In 5 minutes he will be there, but then we don't hear.
Yeah. Yes, so that the basically you conjure up images that maybe somebody Anglophone wouldn't use, and that's also attractive.
Yes, I think so. I'm not. I never think about it that much, because it's the only way I can do it. Mm. Of course, after those first sessions, when I found a solution, when I find what a song could be about. Then the real long writing starts. It's there every day. From the moment I wake up, the moment I wake up in the middle of the night, I have a sentence and I'm really going to my room to write it down, because otherwise I don't remember. So it's there all the time. And now, luckily, we have a phone that can record your voice. But in the past, I sometimes used this small memo recorders, this little tapes, because it was the smallest machine. It could be in your pocket. And what I did was just going on my bike to the WERF, to the studio. It is a bike ride of 40 minutes through town. And then when I had an idea, singing and lyric-wise, I just sang it in that thing.
What I meant, for example, as an image is bike in head.
Like yeah.
That would be an example as a title. I have a bike in my mind or something, you know. Yeah. Like, but it doesn't matter. I mean, you look at it and you think, well, that's nice.
Yeah. That's one of the sentences that came from nowhere. And of course, in the end, had to do with how the song was growing. But I think the moment I started singing about a bike, then the sounds came. Mm. And then the song was going somewhere, like a bike ride, like when you don't have a map. Of course, you can drive to town with a map, but it's also nice to bike or to walk without it.
To get lost.
Somewhere. And just see what happens.
Yeah.
I did it many, many times in Berlin, especially also with the changes of Berlin. And when the wall was gone, in that same year, we played there. And I started walking through town from the east to the west, back. So that's also a kind of songwriting.
Sometimes you have those single lines where you think, oh, well, yes, like, for example, in Three Sisters, love is a suitcase filled with danger.
Yeah, that came from, at that time, many songs were created here in the house, in my room. And this is one of the lines that come up, just singing and playing. That happens all the time. From there, it could be a stepping stone. You have many stepping stones through this river, and you go from stone to stone, and then suddenly the image is complete, that they fit. It could be all different lines, but they fit and make the song together.
You're dealing very much in also surrealistic imagery. Of having encounters between people who could never have met. And that's really contrary as a working process to maybe somebody like John Fogerty of Creedence Clearwater Revival says the first thing that you need is a title. And then you write from there.
Yeah.
Do you ever do that?
Well, it's wonderful when it happens, but it doesn't happen all the time. But it's true. A title can really help you and push you in a direction. And you are lucky when the title is, when it's really the title in the end. So maybe you can use the title but lose it during the making of the song. That doesn't fit anymore then. But in most cases, it's very helpful to have a title like Three Sisters or No Man's Land. And some titles really come from the song, like Nick in the House of John. Mm. That was just a story like it is. Nick Drake being in the house of John Lennon. That simple. You have a lot of words, you have a lot of lines. You take out a few words and then you have a title.
But this surrealism has to do with association of different elements that collide, basically. when you sit down and write something like that, do you know what this is all about?
Not always, no. No, but sometimes it's very concrete. I also work from my memory and put things together. A song like Ivory Boy, it was a difficult one to write because it was a delicate subject about a young man who had cancer, was going to die. And then when he died, I tried to write a song about him. And because it's such a delicate, so difficult subject, you're looking for very fragile things. And then I came to his face in the audience. Then it was Ivory. It was because he was so white. And I remember him in the audience in Hamburg, in the Große Freiheit, in the black crowd, and he was a white face in the black crowd. And suddenly came the Ivory Boy. And that was important to have as a starting point.
It's like a piece of a puzzle that you put together, yeah. Because you have the theme at the beginning and then like those parts.
In this case, I had really a strong theme because I wanted to write. But how? We were in the middle of recording and it started with a theme I had. How can you fade away? That's what I already had on piano. And then all the images came, and the memories of the traveling to Köln and Hamburg. He followed us in Germany. He always traveled with his sister. And there was suddenly a second girl.
And who was this other girl?
It was his illness. It was cancer following them. But it was just a companion all the time. And those are the solutions. They come from the real world. But you have to look for them. You have to wait for them.
There's one line that I found really particular. It's when he bought 3 one-way tickets for the train.
Yeah.
As if he might never come back from a trip. And I thought that was so strong as an image.
Yeah.
I suppose that it must take a long time to write stuff like that.
The thinking about it takes a long time. Mm. Some songs, they followed me for several weeks or maybe even months. And they go on more or less every day. I mean, it doesn't mean that I find solutions during those days, but they're there. Of course, especially when there's already a melody and a recording, I sing. And while singing, I found solutions. Because the best moments are the moments you walk or bike and you just sing the song that you're working on. And then you say, oh my God, I'm singing this and this. It's so simple. Why didn't I think about it 1 month ago? And it's there.
In July 2024, Arvind Linnemann, Tizia van Krieken, Vera van der Poel, Olly Hartung, together with engineer Darren Hain, met up in a holiday home in Vierhouten to make music. They chose one of the songs that are set in the neighborhood of the Watergraafsmeer, Walking with Maria.
Sky, we walk from the light. feet like eyes. I was walking with Maria on a warm summer's day. She's wearing a dress with the yellow flowers, me in my blue jacket, CNA. The river was a newborn child, mother's milk, butterflies. We run from the darkness into the light, hand in hand to the swimming pool. I dreamed last night I was drowning, but now I will swim, and I won't be afraid. Yellow